Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Hello and welcome to Handy Link, sponsored by the Italian Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. The first segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Stephanie Craig and Shan Johnson. They'll be telling us about their efforts to get a chapter of the Turner Syndrome Society right here in Windsor. So tell me a little bit about what you're hoping to have happen with Turner Syndrome here in Windsor.
Well, the Turner Syndrome Society of Canada has chapters across the country. They have and groups also. They have chapters in Vancouver. They've just started one in Calgary, Toronto, Edmonton, Quebec. And they've recently started a group in the Maritimes also. And we thought that since there is such a huge, a significant difference between Windsor and Toronto, which is the nearest chapter to us, that it would be great if we could start up a group or chapter here. And Shan has kind of really taken on the initiative a lot of this. So Shan, if you want to explain some more about some of your reasons for starting this.
The reason is probably pretty personal and pretty selfish. I'm 55. I was diagnosed when I was somewhere between 8 and 10 years old, and I didn't have any, how do I say this? I wasn't discouraged as a young girl or overtly put down because of my short stature, but it would have been nice to have a little bit more support from other Turner's people. I'm 55 right now, and I know that through the lifespan, whether you're a parent parenting a young girl with Turner's, or you're going through the teenage years with Turner's, career-minded, thinking about what does family mean now that I know I can't have my own children, and then in my case, going into or through menopause and the retirement years, I think it's so important to have some support from the community through each of those life experiences as a Turner's woman.
So, in your efforts to bring a chapter here, are you doing any outreach to the community to make them aware of this need?
We're trying. In October, Stephanie and I did an interview with the Windsor Star. We got, one person for sure as a result of that interview. Stephanie's doing some wonderful work in her own post-grad with another Turner's woman. And yes, we're hoping to maybe get an international discussion going.
That's something we would love to do. There's another student here at the University of Windsor who is in the graduate psychology program with me. Her name is Kristen Schramer. She was also diagnosed with Turner syndrome at a young age and is conducting research on Turner syndrome also. And she's originally from the States, so she was really involved in the Turner Syndrome Society of the United States. And through her involvement there, she's recently found out that there is a fairly large group of women in Michigan who have Turner syndrome. And we would really love to forge an international connection with them and participate in some international initiatives. For example, we also do have the annual walk in September to raise awareness for Turner syndrome. And it would be wonderful if within the next year or two, we could perhaps work with them to hold the walk through Windsor and perhaps Detroit or another area in Michigan and make it international.
You'd asked, you know, about how we'd reached out. And one of the issues I've found, I've tried to get, well, I'm in the middle of a project of getting letters sent to doctors in the area, in the city, and haven't received any feedback from them. And because we're a city of less than 200,000, and Windsor, or I'm sorry, Turner syndrome affects one in about 2,500 live births, have I got that correct? So we're a small population in a relatively small city. But still, even if there's only, we need 10 to start a chapter. And to start a chapter, you don't have to be a woman or a teenager with Turner syndrome. You can be a family member. You can be a professional. There was a family doc professional development day at the health building, and it was focused on endocrinology. So I had recent to be acquainted with Jerry Cooper, I believe his name is, and I said, so can we put some Turner stuff in your endocrinology day? And he said, well, not now, because it's you know, already planned, he says, but you know, let's try to think about next year. So getting the message out to the doctors. There's the Canadian Hard of Hearing Society. It's Turner's affects hearing quite prevalently. Heart doctors, ear, nose, and throat doctors. So that's what we're trying to do, but we've got to keep our expectations realistic as we are a small community in a relatively small city.
Well, the fact is, if it affects one person, that's too many right there. Any group with any type of condition is entitled to fair and equal representation. And the fact is, the medical community needs to be more sensitive to the needs of those affected. It's day-to-day life for those who have this condition.
Exactly.
So, if you were to get things established here, would you hope that the work of this chapter would be similar to what's going on in other places?
Yes, definitely. We've seen a lot of amazing initiatives coming out of a lot of the chapters in the Turner Syndrome Society. For example, in Toronto, they have a monthly lunch get-together where anyone who is able to make it that day shows up. They usually keep it at the same restaurant, so it's so everyone already knows pretty much where they're going to be going and they can plan accordingly. Also, they occasionally have movie nights or trips to the zoo or different places like that, and as well as information days where they get local medical specialists to come in and give a brief presentation about a topic that is related to Turner syndrome and the various aspects of it. So, and the Maritimes is holding their own information day for all the provinces in the Maritimes. So it'd be great if we could participate in some more initiatives like that.
Right. One last question here. If you could send any message to the community about the need for this representation, what would each of you say?
Well, I would say, as we've mentioned in this interview already, just because it is such a rare condition, there definitely is that sense of isolation growing up, not only as an individual diagnosed with Turner syndrome, but also as a family, as a parent of a child diagnosed with Turner syndrome. When you first get that diagnosis, you don't know what to expect, you know, if you're an older person getting that diagnosis or if you're a parent, because often, if you do a Google search on Turner syndrome, you come up with all of the absolute worst case scenarios, and 9 times out of 10, that's not going to happen. So it's just so wonderful to be able to have that community of support going through the same things that you are. so that if you're a worried parent, you can talk to other parents and say, you know, did you experience this or what did you think of this? And the same with if you're a girl or a woman with Turner syndrome going through some of the health effects, such as, needing hearing aids for the first time or going through growth hormone treatments, and being able to talk to other people who have gone through those experiences and can relate to that.
For me, I think the big concern I've always had is the impact it has on my identity as a woman, as a female. So I think the support and encouragement of other Turner's women and medical professionals would have been and will continue to be really helpful for me.
I'd like to thank you both for taking the time out to do this.
Thank you so much. Cameron.
My pleasure. In this next segment of our show, we'll hear from Gretchen Rock from Lakeshore St. Andrew's Church. She'll be telling us a little bit about the efforts by the church to purchase mosquito nets for malaria prevention. So tell me a little bit about LSA's efforts to get mosquito nets.
Well, we are having a fundraiser that actually probably got started when I went on a trip to Bolivia. I went with Compassion Canada, and the purpose was to see how Compassion works and operates, but also to visit my sponsor child. And in that visit, we were able to visit a few homes. We were invited to a few homes, these homes being maybe one step up from camping. And in one of the homes, we noticed that one of the children's beds had a mosquito net and the other didn't. And so we innocently asked, why do both children not have mosquito nets? And the mother very optimistically said to me, well, mosquito season isn't for 3 months, and we think that we can save enough money to get the 3 mosquito nets we need, because we actually need 3. Well, when I asked how much a mosquito net was, I first felt horribly guilty because it's about what I spend on coffee in a week. So I thought, oh, I got to get these people mosquito nets. So I did take care of that. When I got back to Canada, I sent pictures of the family, and they got their 3 mosquito nets. And then I thought, you know, we can do better than this. There are tons of kids down there who do not have mosquito nets to protect them from malaria, which has some horrible symptoms and can cause death. And the babies are more susceptible to it. So when I got back, I approached my pastor and said, yeah, I think we can do a fundraiser and get more than 3 mosquito nets going. And so he worked on it, and I kept harassing him. And finally, last week, it came to fruition. And our goal is to purchase at least 1,200 mosquito nets so that all of the projects that we visited will have access to these. And what happens is the project director, he determines who needs the mosquito nets, and he will hand them out.
So have there been any challenges connected to this project?
No, just that I don't do public speaking well, and I had to approach the church and speak to them. But you know what? It's something God has put in my heart and will not let it go, and I will not be happy until I know that all those little children that we visited and played soccer with and held in our arms have a mosquito net and continue to have them, because they get holes in them and they break. And apparently mosquito season is horrible. The irony of it is, before I went, I just took a few pills for malaria that were free because I have great medical coverage. And it's like that easy. There's medication for it, there's protection, and there's insecticides that they also spray. So we're trying to get $20 per mosquito net. I think some of that covers some medication expenses and the spray.
So if you could send any message to the community about the need to do this and to protect these children against this disease, what would you say?
I would say give up a few coffees this week and provide $20 to the LSA project, which is Lakeshore St. Andrew's Church, just off the expressway. Or you can go straight to Compassion Canada. But we are trying to reach a goal, which we haven't quite reached, but we're almost there.
So where can my audience go to find more information?
I went online to find out about the malaria, but there, LSA, Lakeshore St. Andrews, has a website, and they will have a little bit more information on it, or they can just call the church as well. It's in Tecumseh. I'd
like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Great.
HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
The hypnotic lure of the beats led Sudanese-American artist Amir Mohammed to abandon visual art for hip-hop and collaborations with DJ Jazzy Jeff. Now known as Odyssey, he's on a world tour in support of his new release, The Iceberg, making his only area appearance on the Global Friday series at Dearborn's Arab American National Museum on May 26th. The concert begins at 8 p.m. A Q&A meet-and-greet presented in partnership with We Found Hip Hop follows the show. Tickets are $15 general public, $10 Arab American National Museum members, available in advance online at arabamericanmuseum.org, by phone at 313-582-2266, and at the door.
I'm asked to speak, but not to tell the truth. Anonymously in the credits, you can check the proof. In the camera, innovators and creators real. In the mirror, imitators and take a steal. That's a practice put in action.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Stephanie Craig and Shan Johnson, who were telling us about their efforts to get a chapter of the Turner Syndrome Society here in Windsor. We also heard from Gretchen Rock from Lakeshore St. Andrew's Church, who's spearheading a great effort to protect against malaria for some underprivileged children. In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Jared Jolin, special education expert from Berkeley. So tell me a little bit about your experiences with special education.
Great. I started working in the field of special education after I graduated from UCSB way back in 2006. Those early experiences were in the context of providing in-home ABA therapy, applied behavior analysis therapy, for children and adolescents with autism spectrum disorder. And so I held this position for about 6 years, and some of the things that I did while working for this company were supporting the development of social, cognitive, and motor development skills in children with autism spectrum disorder. We did in-home therapy work. I did therapy in the community. I worked in the classroom. In addition, I was a founding member of a social skills group with this agency. And this service was intended to teach adolescents kind of more advanced social cognitive skills in the context of a group therapy approach.
So,
did you have a question?
I was just wondering, what are some of the challenges that you faced in this work?
Well, firstly, some of the children that I worked with could be challenging, and for the most part, challenges were in the form of challenging behaviors. So having to learn to deal with children who engaged in self-injurious behaviors, children who engaged in other forms of attention-seeking behaviors. There were challenges associated with working with the families of these children. particularly getting families to buy in to the strategies that we were implementing in their home. Very important for generalization purposes for children to be learning the same things that we were teaching them from their parents. And so it could be challenging at times to get parents to consistently follow through with some of the things that we were doing with our kids to help them develop. There were challenges associated with funding sources, school districts and regional centers who funded these services for families. And these challenges were primarily in the form of actually getting the funding that these children were entitled to. Oftentimes, these agencies, especially some school districts, were not willing to fund the services that we wanted to provide or that we were prepared to provide because they argued that they would have a in-home, service that was, equally effective as ours. And oftentimes this wasn't the case. So those are some of the challenges that I faced doing the early intervention work.
So to look at the converse side of things, in your time working in special education and autism, is there any success moment you've experienced that stands out for you?
Yeah, so after I worked with children, I transitioned into a role at an employment services agency where I was an intake and assessment coordinator for a program that attempted to get young adults with Asperger's and high-functioning autism work in the community. And so I worked with a number of young adults during all stages of the pre-employment and employment process. And one success that really stands out for me is getting a young man a job at a movie theater. He really enjoyed movies, enjoyed watching all types of movies, was a very outgoing and good-natured young man who in the past has experienced challenges overcoming some of the hurdles that are associated with getting a job. So, for example, the job interview was always a very challenging experience for this young man. He could get job interviews. He had a resume. He could get to that step, but it was the job interview itself that would generally disqualify him. And we ended up getting him a job working in the movie theater here in Daly City, and it really did a lot to increase his self-esteem. He was very proud of the fact that he was working, earning his own money, gaining some level of independence. He was very proud of the fact that he could watch movies at a discounted rate, given that he was an employee of the movie theater. So this is just one example of one of the positive experiences that I had working with this community.
So if you could send any message about the need for special education and inclusion in the community, what would you say?
I would say that my message is that people with disabilities, all disabilities, but I will speak specifically to the case of autism, given that that's my area of expertise, that people with autism aren't necessarily disabled. People with autism are generally different. And what I mean by different is that they represent just a different collection of neurodiversity than do people without autism. And what I mean by that is that we should be thinking about folks on the autism spectrum as, people who are just wired differently, if that makes sense. They don't necessarily lack the abilities to, to do the things that we as people without autism things that are, you know, kind of typical in a social context. They just require more support and more patience. So that would be the message that I would like to send, is that we need to be more aware of the challenges that people often face, and we also need to be thinking about these challenges just in terms of diversity, the normal range of diversity that we see in all human beings.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Okay.
The right to equal access is something that should be taken into consideration for everyone, no matter how they think, move, learn, communicate, what have you. Jarrett was exactly right in his interview when he said, kids with autism are simply wired a little differently. Same could be said of any type of disability. Fact is, it is a difference. It is not an all-defining difference. It does not take away from the core humanity, the core needs of a person. Need for food, shelter, companionship, all the basics. A person with a disability is a person first. Their condition may play some role in who they are and who they are to become, but it does not necessarily have to be the ruling factor of a person's life. The truth is, a person with a disability is just as entitled to consideration and equality as anyone else in society. And the more we recognize this fact, the better off we'll all be. In regards to Gretchen's interview, this really is a great project that LSA is doing. Getting mosquito nets for these underprivileged children, something we take for granted, but something we can treat with just a couple of pills, why in the world would we not take the right steps to prevent it in the first place? Are we so backward a world that we're going to say, we have the cure, we have the prevention, it's good for us, we don't have enough of an open heart to share? That is the most backwards way of thinking I can think of. For the fact is, it is the responsibility and the privilege of those who have to share with those who have not. Working together, building with others, you create for the future. Who knows what these children have the potential to go on to become? But it's a matter of their survival. It's not something many of us could do, to look in the eyes of someone and say, I have a cure, I have a way to keep you safe and healthy, but I'm not going to give it to you. Nobody, in my opinion, could be so cold. For the truth is, you're creating the opportunity for life, the potential to give somebody a future. It's not a difficult thing to do. This is just an amazing project. It's not the first that the church has done along these lines, but take someone beating the drum loudly enough, getting enough attention to the cause to really make something happen. You can't just say just once, oh, we should do something about this. Oh, yes, we should make the effort, but we're not going to. We have to do better by these children, folks. We have to give them the opportunity to have a life of equality, respect, potential, and yes, the firm understanding they will have a future. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal, so get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.